Hey guys, it's Ryan Argwall here, a men's basketball player at Stanford University, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Yeah. My name is Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with talented and interesting individuals linked to the global Indian and South Asian community. It's informal and informative, adding insights to our evolving cultural expressions, where each person can proudly say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. Hi, everyone. On this episode of Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing, a conversation with college basketball athlete Ryan Agarwal. Stay tuned. So this past week, it was my birthday, and it reminds me of how grateful I am for everything and everyone the universe has presented, including how thankful I am for you listening to this right now and sharing it with your friends and family, rating and reviewing and downloading the podcast wherever you listen, and for following us on social media at Dr. Abhay Dandekar. Now, for the majority of these past 52 years, I've been a true follower of sports and basketball at the center of it. This past week, after a month of madness and a women's and men's championship being awarded to LSU and UConn respectively, it was really terrific to catch up with college basketball athlete Ryan Agarwal. Ryan was born outside of Dallas, Texas, and as the child of immigrant parents, grew up loving and excelling at basketball, especially idolizing and being inspired by Satnam Singh, the first and only player of Indian origin selected in the NBA draft. Now, for the child or teen who's out there playing high school and competitive basketball, or globally in a basketball academy or program, mind you, already at a very high level, the odds of getting a scholarship to a Division I school in the U.S. is over 110 to 1, and even less if you think of the 65 schools in the main Power 5 conferences. This past year, Ryan, a 6'6 shooting guard, joined Stanford University as a freshman appearing this season in 17 games, and was one of only a handful of players of Indian or South Asian background, men or women, playing on a Division I basketball roster. We caught up to talk about being a college athlete in 2023, being an Indian American with very little company in this space, and of course, in a year of significant surprises in the recent men's and women's tournaments, I asked Ryan about parity and competition in this era from a player's perspective.
I think it's fun. I think that's what allows us to have fun is that you never know, like, the outcome. The outcomes are never guaranteed. Like, that's why we play. Like, you don't just, you know, forfeit a game because you know you're going to lose. There's always that ability that you have to win. But I think what also makes it fun is that every team has the ability to reach what UConn reached, and that's to figure out their identity and be able to dominate teams. So I think that's what makes, like, you know, teams continue to work hard, because, you know, a lot of teams could be like, oh, man, like, you know, we're either going to win or lose a lot of these games, but there's no certified outcome. So why try? Well, what you're really trying for is to reach that dominant side that you guys, that every team has a potentially to have. What makes the game fun for those guys that may not have the best team is the fact that you can always, you know, win a game just because you play harder, you have more effort, you do the little things, you do the dirty things, like. Things like that is what makes the game fun. But I think what really drives us to work hard every single day is the ability to reach what, you know, UConn reaches, that dominant type of team that, you know, when they play the right way, there's no chance of any other team losing. So.
Well, and I mean, like a team who's, you know, not necessarily one of the blue bloods, not necessarily one of the larger conferences, not necessarily a team that was expected to be there. And, you know, three out of the four men's teams, a couple of the women's teams, they really sort of went far in the tournament. And for you, I mean, as a player who particularly is, I mean, you're in one of the power conferences, you have had this experience now. Does it mean that every player sort of, it changes perhaps, I wonder what the meaning of capturing lightning in a bottle or like really becoming dominant towards the end of the season? Does it change perhaps the outlook of how you actually prepare?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest thing it helps as a team is that we never look down on a team, meaning that no team we believe is so bad that we just like, it doesn't matter what we do, we're going to beat them. Never look at a team like that, because that's the teams that come back and bite you in the butt, because, you know, you're not ready for them. On the other hand, if a team's that much better than us, it doesn't mean anything to us, because at the end of the day, we've seen other teams do it.
Yeah.
So why not? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it works both ways. You can't look at any team in a certain way. You just got to look at them as your next game.
You know, with that, because there's such like this, hey, anything can happen on any given night. And, you know, the unexpected surprises of March, definitely it's what makes college basketball so exciting in that way.
For sure.
it just kind of re-emphasizes the importance of teamwork and what that's like in for a team to really become a unit and find themselves and discover themselves, particularly in March. That's always best, you know, in college basketball. But, from your standpoint now, I mean, having played pretty competitively for the last many years and now at Stanford, I'm curious, for you, what do you look for in a teammate?
I think the biggest thing for me, like, that I know, like, this teammate's going to be, like, a great teammate is if I would be friends with them if they weren't a teammate. Like, those are the teammates that are, like, that, you know, you're going to ride or die with. The guys that would be your friends even if they weren't on the court with you. Those are the type of teammates that, like, you know, are next level type of teammates. Those are the type of guys that, like, you know, you make runs with, you dominate games with, because you just, the chemistry is on another level. And that's what it comes down to. Teammates is chemistry. Like, that's the sole purpose of having a teammate, all this chemistry, especially in basketball. So, yeah, and for me being a teammate, you know, obviously being a good guy off the court, that's you know, why we go to team meals, hang out ourselves, go to movies together. On the court, I think one of the biggest things that I do that I feel like a good teammate will always do is have empathy. I think empathy is one of the biggest things. I think you do need to be competitive. You do need to ride on your teammates a little bit, definitely, to get the dog out of them.
Yeah.
But in certain times, like, if you miss a game-winning shot, like, you don't need to tell the dude, like, what are you doing? Because he knows he messed up. He missed a game-winning shot.
Yeah.
So you just got to put yourself in other people's shoes or your teammate's shoes. And that's one of the biggest qualities that I feel like as a person for me, I take very seriously.
Has that been something you've had to learn, particularly,
When I was a younger player in high school, in AAU basketball, I had teammates that were both ways. I had teammates that were confident in me. I made a mistake. I turned the ball over. They were, next play, you're good. Come on, you're good.
Yeah.
Now, to a certain extent, say you're the best player on the team and you just had 5 turnovers in a row and you're rushing the game in a little bit, you need a teammate that has your back. It's going to be like, Ryan, lock in. Like, what are you doing? Lock in. Yeah. You need those type of teammates. But you don't need a teammate that's going to ride you on every single mistake you make, especially when you know yourself that you made a mistake.
Now, you know, famously, right, Jordan, Kobe, these guys were notorious for having such high expectations of the people that they around, right? And it wasn't always that they had the greatest empathy skills, but they were so driven. Yeah. And they were like, hey, listen, I don't expect you to do anything that I wouldn't be doing out there. Yeah. And yet those weren't necessarily the guys that everyone wanted to go hang out with after a game.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's different levels. I mean, those guys, they're like greatest players of all times. Like, they can do whatever they want. You know what I mean? Like, they have the ability. You have a leader like LeBron, though, that has a lot of empathy, too.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, you saw what J.R. Smith did in that one playoff game. You didn't see LeBron going and yelling at him. He understood. He like, everyone makes mistakes. Obviously, he was frustrated. He was on the bench. He was frustrated. He was mad. But you didn't see him go cuss him out because he knew there's still time to play. I need J.R. on my bench. I need him to lock in. So why yell at him and get him under?
In that way for you, I mean, it sounds like that sort of gravitates more towards your personal and your sort of leadership style. Right. That, like, you know, you're driven by empathy. You're driven by making sure that everyone feels included. And so it's going to motivate people a little bit differently. And I've heard that basketball coaches and read how they've talked about your personal sort of basketball IQ. Is there also sort of a non-basketball, almost even a social or emotional intelligence that's super important for you when it comes to kind of your individual and your team game?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, for me in high school, I was definitely more of a leader my senior year than coming in here my freshman year. For me, I just had to know my role. And so as a senior in high school, socially and emotionally, of course, on the court, you know, I was trying to, you know, give the younger players. I had two young sophomores that were starting for us when I was a senior. And I knew how good they are. Like, I knew they have the ability to get there, especially one of my players. He's another Indian guy named Arhan. So I would definitely, off the court, it's high school, like, you know, we're hanging out, we're boys, but on the court and even emotionally during, like, say, halftime or something, if they're not locked in, this is my senior year, you know, this is my last chance. And if you're going to start on the team that, you know, I'm trying to lead, I need you locked in every day because this is my last chance to make a run. So this is their sophomore year. It may not mean as much to them, but this is my senior year. So for me, I would ride them if they weren't locked in because I knew how good they could have been. So it's things like that. You know, same thing here. You know, we have our seniors on our team. This is, you know, potentially their last run unless they come back, whatever. But for them, it means so much to them that, like, for us every day when we're in practice, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for them. So socially, off the court, they're hanging with us. They're being, like, kind of like bros. Like, you know, we always got your back. You need anything, you know, you need a ride, we got you. That's kind of how I was senior in high school. Now, obviously, there's definitely an age gap. So you're not seeing them in every hangout you go to because those guys are 21, 22 years old. We're 18, 19 years old. There's just a difference. But in terms of the social, emotional, like, they've been through it. And I've been through what those guys when I was in high school been through. Cognitively, like, you understand what they're going through.
Yeah. And that's maybe where the empathy comes in.
Exactly. That's kind of why, like, for me, like, I've been in that same position. I've been the little scrawny 120-pound player on varsity basketball that was getting pushed around and shoved.
Yeah.
And would it have helped me if guys were like, you're weak, what are you doing? Probably not. Yeah. You know, it was helping that guys were like, dude, shoot the ball when you're open. Dude, take that shot. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Oh, you're good. Slap on the butt, like, you're good. Next play. Like, things like that, you know? Motivates me to raise my confidence.
You know, you mentioned kind of people who have been role models for you. Are there players other than LeBron, perhaps, who you've worked with or even like you've aspired to be where you're like, hey, these guys really know what kind of style, like you want to mimic their style, or you have that ability to say, hey, look, they seem like they have that kind of high basketball IQ, high social and emotional EQ at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I worked out with Steph like one or two times, and I mean, you know, literally one of the most humble dudes I've ever met. Came in, walked in the gym, chilling, no security guards, none of that extra stuff, just himself, had his dog one day. You know, come in, chilling, gave my mom a hug, very, very relaxed, humble being. You wouldn't have even thought that he just won a championship a couple months ago, the NBA title. And, you know, we worked out, competitor. I mean, he was a competitor against himself in terms of, like, say you got to make 9 out of 10 shots. You're 8 for 9 right now. A lot of guys are just going to take the simple 1-2 shot. He's shooting all these step backs. He doesn't care if he's got to redo it. He's competing against himself. So when I worked out with him, I learned a lot of things. You know, we had done a really hard conditioning workout because that's what you got to do as a shooter. Got to be in condition. We finished our workout. He gets on the line and runs another 17, another side to side. And I followed. I was like, I'm not going to fade right. me out. I got to follow him. I'm on my hands and knees, though. I'm dying. Sure. But that's the type of work ethic, you know, that I want to be and have, while also being such a humble being, like, you know, with the accomplishments that he has. So in terms of, like, workout type of person, I think Steph Curry is just a great person to look up to. I definitely have some guys that I feel like have crazy motivation that are, like, my personal friends, personal teammates. I had a guy named Tariq, who, when I was a freshman, he was a senior. He was one of those guys that just kept me in the gym. And so going into my sophomore year in high school, he was going to play JUCO. And so he was in town that summer. We'd wake up every morning at like 5:15, 5-ish, hit the gym at 5:30 right when it opened because nobody else was there, and work out till about 7:15, 7:30-ish, get some snacks and then go hit the high school for weights, and then take a nap. And we take a nap, we wake up, it's 10:30, we already got 2.5 workouts in. I always will aspire to have that type of work ethic that he does.
Yeah.
I'm a D1 school now. He was going JUCO and putting that much work in. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, that's the type of guys that you want to surround yourself with.
It's kind of interesting that, like, you know, on the one hand, you have someone who you're so familiar with, who knows your game, who's trying to, like, sort of push you, make that work ethic, you know, go to the next level. And then you have the aspirational person like Steph Curry. They're so accomplished. They have so many accolades, and yet they've got that humble gene in them so that they're very relatable like that.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with college basketball athlete Ryan Agarwal. Stay tuned. Conversation. It's the antidote to apathy and the catalyst for relationships. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, my name is Richa Morjani, and you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing with Abhay Dandekar.
Welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with college basketball athlete Ryan Agarwal.
You know, being an Indian American from Texas unto itself is not that unique, right? I mean, there's a lot of Indian Americans in Texas. But now you fold in the athletic skill as a basketball player, right? And now you're kind of in pretty rare company as a D1 athlete. When you think about what you just mentioned, right? The work ethic, the accolades on the court, and also kind of you're pushing yourself and motivating yourself off the court as well as on the court. Do you feel perhaps because there's such a rarity of that person, right? The scholar athlete in D1 basketball who's an Indian American, does the motivation or even the drive change at all because you are part of such a small group of people who are doing this or who have done this?
Yeah, 100%. I have my motivation for myself, of course, to play basketball and, you know, have fun with it. And like, obviously my dream is to make the NBA and like make my job playing basketball. But for me, I'm not really just doing it for myself, of course. I'm doing it for, you know, a heritage. I'm doing it for like, you know, all the Indians in Texas, all the Indians in India, like everywhere across the globe. And for me, it's like, if I was gifted one in a million to have the opportunity to do this, you know what I mean? So for me, it's like, why not take advantage of the opportunity? It's all like, it just all works out perfectly. I love the game. I already love the game. Like, that's not something I have to worry about. If this was something I didn't like, it'd be a little bit more pressurizing, but I love the game. Like, that's like my favorite thing to do. So why not try to make that my job? And so the fact that I have all these guys, you know, this heritage behind me that's constantly encouraging me, it's just a great feeling. Like, and because of that, it gives me that extra, you know, motivation, the extra step to just be like, I'm in a gym, I'm tired. I'm like, man, if I was doing this just for myself, then maybe I'd stop. But I'm not doing this just for myself. I'm doing this, number one, for me, and doing this, number two, for my family. And I'm doing this for my friends and my heritage. Like, so for me, if it was less than definitely doing it for just my heritage, like just in terms of, you know, my people back home and me, then, you know, I'd probably take a couple more days off, whatever, just chilling. But I'm doing this for something that's way bigger than me, you know?
Yeah. No, and I mean, it's sort of like a little bit different of a weight on your shoulders. Sure. And with that, right, when you think about it, you know, when you're on the court, it's the skill, it's the work ethic, it's the outcome, right? I mean, like, how do you play? How does your team do? Wins and losses. There's a definition to that. Off the court, and when you're now reflecting on how this matters in the Indian American community, in the South Asian community, in the global sort of Indian community, as a member of the Indian American community, or even the global Indian community, as you've gone through this process and had some success in this kind of rare company, what has it sort of taught you about yourself as an Indian American?
For me, as an Indian American, I think it's taught me, honestly, to be just like grateful. In a lot of ways, like Sean's obviously going to India, and I'm seeing all these posts of these concrete courts that, like, you know, may not have the best hoops that they're trying to fix and raise for all these, you know, young girls and boys that are trying to, you know, get that development to reach this type of level of basketball. And for me, you know, I wouldn't have really seen that, I feel like, or even looked to help them if I wasn't Indian American. Mm-hmm. I would be looking at, you know, the people in my city, the people that I'm, you know, playing against, which I do 100%, because I'm competing against those people too. But for me, I think it's kind of given me like a blessed outlook, you know, even going to India when I was younger, when my parents would take me. So for me, I was just like, I'm truly blessed to have the ability to have parents that came from India, that migrated over, that put in that work for me and my siblings to live the life that we do here. And with that came the fact that, you know, they put me in basketball, they put me in all these sports, and that, you know, being here gave me the development in basketball that I needed to get.
You know, on the court, everyone's agnostic, right? Like, your skill is your skill. But then because, you know, Indian American, you know, community members, perhaps, I wonder if more of the surprise or even kind of like the reflection is that, like, oh my gosh, wow, there's that much more pride when they see someone like you who is actually doing this on a very different level and really reflecting the kind of excellence in the community. Have you gotten that a lot where it's like, you know, look, you're not only, you are carrying the sort of weight of the community on your shoulders, and there's a lot of excellence and a lot of pride that sort of goes along with that?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some weight on my shoulders. I don't really feel that much weight because basketball to me is just kind of like, it's a hobby. Like, it's a fun thing for me to do. Obviously, it's a job here at Stanford, being a D1 athlete. But for me, it's kind of like, I love it so much, you know? So, like, it doesn't really feel pressurizing to me. But, yeah, I think social media and things like that, I definitely get a lot of love, which helps fuel me. Even on the court, you know, I've had people that have traveled. So I've had a lot of people come just to watch me play, and ask pictures and autographs after the game. And that definitely is, like, fueling me for more, like, okay, you know, people are looking up to me. I got to put in more work to continue this and help them out and represent them. Yeah. So for sure, I think, yeah, there's definitely a side of my life that, like, in my lifestyle that includes that. But I don't necessarily feel like I have a lot of weight on my shoulders necessarily just because I'm just a 19-year-old kid, like, having fun with it. You know what I mean? So, like, there's not, like there's not – I know a lot of kids would consider it pressurizing, but for me, I feel like my personality is just kind of enjoy the moment, kind of, like, obviously putting the work behind the scenes, but putting in work's fun to me, so.
I wonder one thing, too, because, like, you know, in basketball, sort of a sport where it's almost poised differently, right? It's a global sport, even though it's got a big American heritage. Maybe unlike football, that there's already a rich tradition of, you know, players like, you know, Sabonis or Manu Ginobili or Pau or Giannis who aren't American, and they're already in the game. It's already quite kind of diversified in that way. The rarity of being that Indian American player is perhaps less of a surprise in the basketball community, but certainly in the Indian American community, there becomes this sort of like, wow, look at that. There's a great representative for us in this space. I'm just curious about this because, again, you're in a very kind of rare area for our community. Is there any pitfall maybe to being labeled in that way? And any label for that matter, like, oh, that's Ryan, the 3-point shooter, or that's Ryan, the Indian American player, or that's Ryan, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, do they become helpful identity blocks for you, or is it a problem sometimes to kind of be looked at as unidimensional?
I think it can go both ways. I think you can definitely build off of it, branding wise, you know, making a name for yourself. I think in a lot of ways like that, it definitely helps. But that's kind of like what we've been talking about. That's kind of what a lot of people talk about. So actually going back to the other side where it may not be as good. So say hypothetically in the future, I'm trying to get to the NBA, right?
That's the goal, right?
Yeah. So when it happens, a lot of people may be like, oh, you know, he's just gotten the recognition. He's just a player he is because he's one of the only Indian guys doing it in the game. But truthfully, compared to everybody else, is he really that good? Like, you know,
yeah.
Who knows? So in that way, that could be one way. Another way, they may just say, you know, brown people can't hoop.
Right.
I've had colleges pass up on me in the past. I told a couple of my recruiters, we've never seen a D1 brown player succeed at this level. Do we want to risk a scholarship spot for him? It's a little bit of a gamble there. So in terms of that, that could kind of suck. But, you know, when I look back at that, I was like, kind of good because I went to a school that wanted me, not to a school that's just going to take me because of my, you know. So there's good and bad things. Obviously, I think the benefits outweigh. I love the position I'm in. I wouldn't choose another position no matter who it is because, like, why not, like, the person that's kind of leading the way and has the ability and potential to lead the way, just have be someone that enjoys basketball, isn't really pressurized by his position. I think there definitely can be negatives, but I think being, you know, Indian, being different is definitely something huge that I take personally and I like hold dear to my heart for sure.
Almost like it makes it easier to kind of be more carefree and say, hey, this is who I am, take it or leave it.
There's not a lot of expectation. I mean, there's definitely expectations by people, but
yeah,
it's not really been done a lot before. So like,
right.
There's not like a, oh, he's got to reach this certain level,
yeah,
or he's just a nobody, you know? Like,
yep. You know, thinking a little bit about just now the idea of being a Division I college athlete, what's maybe been the biggest, I'd say, misconception that's even surprised you or even your family about being a Division I college athlete? I mean, you know, whether it's the transition to college or even just like the pace, you know, the rhythm of being a college athlete, the lifestyle of being a college athlete, what have been some of the misconceptions that you've had to kind of like take a look at and be introspective about?
I think I don't necessarily think it's a misconception, but it was definitely a little bit of a shock to me, was like the lifestyle in terms of like time management. You only have 24 hours in a day. You're using only some of it to sleep, so it only leaves you with so many more. And so when I came in here, I was here over the summer, which really helped me get in the rhythm of understanding like how to manage my time slowly. It was like a good starting point to kind of develop into the time management that I had to kind of get ready for. So I had only 8 units of school and 8 hours of basketball that we could do a week. That counts 4 hours in the gym and on the field doing like sleds and stuff, and 4 hours on the court. So 4 hours weightlifting, 4 hours on the court. But, you know, it did kind of seem like that helped me kind of like acclimate to like the living that lifestyle now. You know what I mean? So when fall hit, it was like an increase. I was taking 14 units a week. We had 20, and like to the latter half of fall, we were doing 20 hours a week of basketball. So that it was a big difference. And mentally, it takes a lot to be able to be like, all right, I have practice, but I still got 2 papers due that I got to do
right
after. I'm time managing my day throughout the day, trying to figure out, you know, when am I going to call my parents throughout the day? When am I going to maybe meet my friend for lunch? And when am I going to put in all those extra hours of work? So now that I'm in spring now, it's a little different. We go back to 8 hours a week in terms of basketball. So for me, it's kind of like I got a lot of time to put my personal in work. And so, you know, in terms of next year, like, you know, this is my biggest time to make a jump right here. This time, this summer coming up, this off season basically is my biggest time, which I'm going to be doing a lot of stuff that I've looked into, a lot of work that I'll be putting in to, you know, make a jump in next year's role and everything.
You know, whether it's time management or even the transition to the college game and the idea that it's a 365-day process and there's, you know, sort of the on-the-court stuff, the off-season stuff, remembering, of course, that, you know, you're a college student. What's do you have a major yet? What's been sort of your hardest classes so far?
Yeah, I'm actually in my hardest class right now. It's called Math 51. It's kind of, it's calculus, but based on like the record of like, what everyone says, like, this is the like one of the hardest classes at Stanford. So the reason I'm taking the spring though is because basketball is definitely short. So I'm like, this is the time to load up your class schedule, because in fall, you can't really load up your class schedule because you're traveling so much. So now that we're not traveling as much playing games, it gives me not only more time for school, but more time to put in individual work for myself, get in the gym more in terms of not traveling, things like that. So Math 51 definitely is the hardest class I'm taking right now. But I'm kind of looking towards econ as my major. You don't have to declare a major to your junior year here, which is nice. So you can kind of like look around. But yeah, my brother and my dad are both on the business side of the world.
Yeah. In that way, like it's much easier now in the off season to take that pause, right? Like you get like, it's not just the time, so to speak, but like the mental ability to just sort of like, hey, I'm going to reflect a little bit. I'm going to actually make sure that I'm paying as much attention to all the different things that are out there. But then during the season, with travel, with all the other sort of expectations that are put on you from the team, I imagine that like this last year particularly has been sort of a great building. It's a crash course for sure, but it's a great building block for things to come.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think definitely you got to take a little bit of mental break. I think that's what kind of spring break was for. Just kind of chill, hang with the fam. You don't see them a lot, so just chill. But as soon as we get back, like as soon as I'm back, like I at the gym, like it's kind of right back to it, because you only have so much time to become a player you want to be. So for me, like this is crucial time for me to get better. Of course, I'm taking a bigger load on classes, but that comes back to the time management. Like I can't use that as an excuse to like lay back on basketball.
But you mentioned one thing as well, like, you know, there's only a limited amount of time of becoming the player you want to be. Are you finding that there's, you know, enough time for you to become the person you want to be?
Yeah, I think being in Stanford, being surrounded by the people I'm here with, like, it's hard not to become the person you want to be, because everyone here is just amazing. They're all great. I mean, everyone we meet, like, it's kind of a true statement when you say you kind of become who you're surrounded with. Like, that, like you become, like, the people you're surrounded with. So, for me, it's not a bad thing to be surrounded by Stanford students, you know? It's really not. Maybe if I was surrounded by Cal students, it'd be like this.
But I was waiting for it. I was just waiting for it.
But, I mean, yeah. And so for me, I think I want to be the person that's dedicated to my craft. I want to be the person that believes in myself no matter what the circumstances are. And so for me, like, yeah, I'm focusing on basketball and definitely school's there too. I definitely find time to socialize and, you know, be a human being and hang out with friends and things like that. But like being this type of person in college, whereas I know if I wasn't playing basketball and I was kind of just chilling, just being a student, you know, another college, I may not be as locked in as I am. I think it's a great spot for me in terms of like where I am, like just like, you know, and also being surrounded by other, like, I'm not the only one on my team that's putting in the work in school wise, like all my teammates are doing that. So I think just being surrounded by those type of people, it shows you like just a whole new level of work ethic.
You're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. After a quick break, we'll come back to our conversation with Stanford's Ryan Agarwal. Stay tuned. Every story told is a lesson learned, and every lesson learned is a story waiting to be told. I'm Abhay Dandekar, and I share conversations with global Indians and South Asians so everyone can say, trust me, I know what I'm doing. New episodes weekly, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi, this is Tony Khan, the owner of All Elite Wrestling, AEW, Fulham Football Club, and the Jacksonville Jaguars of the NFL. And you're listening to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing.
Hi there, and welcome back to Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing. Let's rejoin our conversation now with Stanford men's basketball player, Ryan Agarwal.
I was curious about one thing that you briefly mentioned earlier, but you know, the entire sort of NIL, the name and image likeness rules, have brought such a great level of empowerment to college athletes and student athletes. Was this something that you were prepared for? And maybe for that matter, as far as like learning about the idea of building a brand and, you know, the commercial side of things and the business side of basketball, or even the business side of athletics for that matter, what have been some of those surprises that you've kind of also been able to embrace now this year?
I think, yeah, obviously coming to college, like my goal is basketball. It's not really to make money in college, but why not? That's a big plus. So like, obviously everyone's going to take advantage of it. I think it's definitely in a way a good thing because it keeps a lot of kids in college like longer than they need to be, because what's the point of going to the NBA if you can get another year, graduate, and you're making money still? So in terms of that, I think there's definitely, yeah, it's a huge thing. It's a great thing. Obviously, I've looked into it. I'm definitely, you know, pursuing different options in terms of, it's very risky to make sure you don't do things the wrong way. You want to make sure you do things the right way, because with eligibility and everything, that's the only downside I feel like with NIL, that there's a lot of risk in terms of who you're dealing with, what you're doing, contracts, all this stuff. So you just got to make sure, you know, you're with the right people doing the right things. But I think for me, it's just like, it's like a new opportunity that's amazing, especially being in the spot that I am in. Like, I definitely will try to take advantage of it. And I think it's also just like a great way for college players to also kind of get involved with the real world a little bit more. Like, you know, when you're, I have a lot of friends that are, you know, hooping at, you know, public schools that are doing really well, basketball side of things. School-wise, they're not really doing it like it's kind of like the classic stereotype of athletes kind of take the easy classes, whatever, because those coaches want them to focus on, you know, just
basketball.
So
right.
For them with NIL, it adds a whole new different plate of education in terms of real world.
Yeah.
How to market yourself, how to, you know, build relationships that are going to help you in the future.
Sure.
How to meet. So it's a whole different plate that comes in a different way that helps you learn, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. And I mean, yeah. Do you feel like, I mean, there's always the balance measure of things, that the argument, the risk and the cost of it is that, you know, it does actually like completely bring a new commercial aspect to it. It's like the athlete becomes the agent, the athlete becomes the marketer, the athlete becomes the advertiser. And does that mean that on the one hand, you grow up real fast, right? I mean, you definitely become much more savvy and you get a lot of real world experience. Does it at all take away from focus?
No, because I mean, for me, I haven't even rushed into anything. I could have maybe done stuff this past year and things. This past year, I was really focused on basketball. That was my number one goal. But also, like, I don't really have to like necessarily get involved with it, because you know, with my family being in the situation that they're in, like, I'm comfortable enough that I don't need to do make money. You know, for me at this point, making money is just because I can. I have the ability to. Of course, when I'm older, like, I'm not going to rely on my parents. Like, that's like, I'm going to be blessing them with the stuff that I earn. But for right now, like, Stanford's doing what it needs to do for me, and my parents are in a comfortable enough situation that I don't really need to make, it's not like a need for me, you know?
Yeah.
So,
but it's an effective enough process, and it's there for you. So why not learn it? Why not be part of it?
So exactly. So that's why I want to make sure I do things the right way. Like, that's why I'm not in a rush to make any money, because I'm comfortable. I don't need, like, that's not a necessity for me right now. Basketball is my number one priority. So for me, that's something that I'll definitely look at. I've been looking at, I've definitely pursuing different options, but it's not something I'm going to, you know, utilize all my time on just because I'm trying to make quick money.
Sure.
Because I need it for some reason. So,
yep. I want to see Ryan Agarwal, the cartoon character, coming out. Okay. We got to make that happen.
I'll be waiting for that. I'll be waiting for that one too. I'll be coming crazy.
I imagine that, you know, for you this past year, one of the big leaps, not only just the college transition, but like that leap from going from a high school player, AAU, et cetera, travel ball to college ball at Stanford, you know, it is that quantum leap, the speed, the athleticism, the technique, even the preparation for the game is, you know, you're now at a different level of athletic participation. I ask this to other, you know, people as well. What did you perhaps have to unlearn and even relearn about your game this past year?
I think that what I had to really relearn is fundamentals. That is one of the biggest things that college ball takes advantage of. Being, you know, a 6'6 player in high school basketball, public school, you can get away with a lot. You can really get away with a lot, not boxing out, you know, maybe not shot faking, kind of using your body to your advantage and getting buckets because you're just bigger than guys, you know, like different things like that. Now, when you go to college ball, you're back to being a freshman. You're back to having to do the little things to get an open shot. You're not 240 unless you are 240. So you can't just, you know, you can't just get in there and shoot over people because there's seven foot two guys down there. You got to learn to, like, you can't just go get a rebound because dudes are bigger than you. Got to learn to box out. So I think a lot of those things and fundamentals is something that you really got to, like, just learn to relearn, you know, and have the egotistical check in yourself to be like, okay, I need to slow down and realize. I think also what I had to understand was pace. In college basketball, pace is very big. You know, obviously there's times to play really fast, transition, got to be in shape, of course. But one of the things is also being able to play slow, not rushing things, ball screen reads, things like that. It takes like a really high IQ basketball player to know when to go fast, when to stop, when to go slow, when to have them on your hip, things like that. Just a lot of basketball terms that, like, as a basketball player, it's you. When you watch games, you're like, oh my God, like, he's really reading that ball screen. He's really good at things. So things like that. In terms of unlearning, I kind of had to unlearn like my, not necessarily, but kind of my ego. Like, I can't, like, I have to be able to be coachable. Like, I was always coachable, but, like, you know, my coaches in high school kind of, we'd work together in terms of like, what do you feel like you want to do here? Cause I was, you know, like, when you're kind of more the main player on the team, you're kind of working to benefit you. You know, they're asking you what type of offenses you want to run, things like that. Now, when you're being a freshman where there's already a system in place, you got to unlearn the fact that you have a say in terms of things like that. Of course, like, you know, you have talked with your coaches, you talk, but you're a freshman, like, you got to be able to, you know, fit in the system. So for me, it was kind of like I had to learn to just be like I had to, like, I already had it and I was coachable, but I had to learn to, like, really, like, not only be coachable but implement it in my game. You know, you can do so many things one-on-one with the coach, talk to him, but being able to implement into live play is a whole different level of a task that needs to be done. So,
you know, is that something that sometimes people have a difficulty with? I mean, it's not just a humility. It's actually just saying, hey, look, you know what? There's a different way of doing the fundamentals, or not only that, but, like, in some ways, either relearning or unlearning how you've actually been a player with a coach in the past.
Yeah, I think for me, like, I had to go back to the days where I was in sixth, seventh grades literally throwing, tossing the ball out, 1-2 shot fake. Toss the ball out, 1-2 shot fake. Because when you become a good enough shooter, you can kind of just do this, and it's kind of like a shot fake. But for me to get those shots off in college, I had to actually get guys jumping in the air. And so for me, I had to learn to go back to having a slow motion shot fake that looks realistic. And so that, like, for me, that was one of the biggest things I worked on over the school year that, you know, I had to really focus on, is having a good shot fake, which is something you learn in, like, the first week of basketball. Having a strong base of triple threat. Guys in college are going to push up on you. They're bigger than you. So you have to be able to create your own space, having a good triple threat, which is something, again, you learn, like, the first week you get introduced to basketball. So, yeah.
Well, I think it's certainly early in your basketball journey, but there's always an eye, I imagine, on legacy, right? And, like, kind of what you're leaving behind you. And so when you're fast forwarding even a little bit, or even not so far in the future, what do you hope to be remembered for? Whether it's as a basketball player, as a scholar athlete, as an Indian American, on the court, off the court, what are some of the signatures that you hope people will be remembering you for?
I think for me, like, being in, you know, areas with a lot of hoopers and kind of seeing hoopers get to the next level and things like that, I think one of the things is just being a hooper that's humble but loves doing what he's doing and kind of is just his own person, if that makes sense. Like, the people that try to do too much for social media, for, you know, teammates, just aren't humble. They attract a lot of attention, but it's not the attention that I want to attract. I want to attract, you know, attention for being who I am, being a goofy dude that enjoys having fun but loves hooping and, you know, will put in the extra work and has a chance to do something great being an Indian to reach the next level. So definitely, you know, being an Indian basketball player, number one for sure. But being an Indian basketball player that enjoys himself, that just enjoys being humble, enjoys the process, doesn't really let a lot get to him, kind of just, and you know, just humble, like, and just having fun with it. And I feel like that's what I've been doing, kind of keep doing it. You know, just follow the process. You got to make decisions throughout the way and kind of figure it out and be serious at times. But for the most part, just being like a 19-year-old kid and enjoying, you know, I hope I always continue to have like the 19-year-old attitude, the seventh grade attitude that I had, like the love for the game that I had. And I hope I just continue having that love for the game. And it's shown like the way I portray myself. And that's kind of what I want my like legacy to be, just a guy that made it to the next level, represented his heritage, but just had fun, you know, just had fun with it.
Well, I think people who are watching your game are loving it and they're having fun on the journey along with you. Ryan, what a treat to share a conversation with you. I hope we can do it again sometime down the road. And thank you so much.
No question. Thank you. I appreciate you so much, Doc. Appreciate you having me on this.
Thanks so much, Ryan. And just to be clear, and as a reminder to everyone out there, that even with me being a fan of Ryan Agarwal, Trust Me, I Know What I'm Doing is squarely in Bear territory. And a hearty congrats to new Golden Bear head coach, Mark Madsen. Let's get this thing turned around fast. 52 trips around the sun for me, and enjoying the ride every day. Till next time, I'm Abhay Dandekar.